How y'all doing? I've heard from a couple of sources, actually over years I've heard this, that when I speak here, 90% of the people never know what I say because they can't hear me. Well, that's an exaggeration, but my point is, if you can't hear me, right now, it's famous, right? If you can't hear me, raise your hand. There's space down closer that might help. Right now, does this sound okay? Sound like you can hear me? Gentlemen, where's Garnet? Garnet, do you think this is loud enough? By the way, Garnet didn't just happen to be my wife. I worked like hell at that. And one other thing, I'm trying to get you in a good mood. One other thing, I want you to know that when I chose that foolish rich man parable, I didn't know that you were short of money. I was totally innocent. So this is what we're going to do. I'm just going to talk a little while, first about Dietrich Bonhoeffer, second about New Testament scholarship, thirdly about the parable, fourthly, too painful to mention now. So Dietrich Bonhoeffer was a great theologian of the 20th century, one of the best, and he returned to Nazi Germany because he said, this is my country, I have to be there. And things went from bad to worse, and he finally, though he was a pacifist, fought through his conscience and decided to join in the plot to assassinate Hitler. The plot failed, as you know, and all of those people who were involved in the plot were swept up and hanged, including Bonhoeffer. But while he was in jail, waiting to be hanged, what did you think? That would focus your mind, wouldn't it? Anyway, he thought about this issue of, can you have religionless Christianity? Now, you know, until a couple of hundred years ago, the supernatural and the natural were all mixed together. You know, we didn't have any scientific method or anything to sort out what's really true and what can be tested, and yada, yada. We didn't have that. So it was a mixture. And when the Bible was written, cover to cover, it was written in that time when the natural and the supernatural were mixed in together. And that was right, of course, as appropriate. That was the time. But now, Bonhoeffer used this phrase. He said, we have come of age. A little amazing that he was able to say, we have come of age in the midst of the Nazis. But he thought, we have become a modern people, we've become a scientific people, we no longer believe in the supernatural. We don't. In this room, right now, none of us look to the supernatural for solving our normal problems. If something happens that we don't understand, we try to find somebody who can explain it, but we don't think it's a supernatural thing. We don't. If you do think that, well, maybe you're in the wrong place. All right, that's the aside. All right, so Bonhoeffer was wondering, if you peel away the supernaturalism from the Gospels, peel away the supernaturalism from the stories about Jesus, then what do you have left? What do you have left? And so scholarship began. This is the second part, New Testament 101. When scholars decided to look at the documents of the Bible, especially the New Testament, through the eyes of scholars, through the eyes of scholars who would examine any ancient document, they took away the supernatural stuff, the stuff of piety that some people might believe in, but they focused on what could you really demonstrate as being true about Jesus. That was the whole thing about the search for the historical Jesus. the search for the historical Jesus. One thing they discovered was, and you all know this already, but I'll refresh your memory, there's not a single word in the New Testament that was written by anyone who knew Jesus personally. Not one word, not one sentence. Because it was all written long after Jesus was dead, several generations after Jesus was gone. And the early church, at that time, was writing the book. And by that time, they had become a more Hellenistic church. They had abandoned the Jewish tradition because the Jewish people were not eager to become Christian. So they went into the Hellenistic world, and then there you have the thing about a Redeemer coming down and going back and all of that stuff, which came from various religions of the Roman Empire at that time. So where did they look? Where could you find something in the gospel stories? Not in John, for sure. Not in the Gospel of John, for sure. It was written much later and has John's whole theology in it, but not a word, scholars tell us now, not a word that could have been uttered by Jesus. Remember John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son that whoever believeth in him should have everlasting life. That's in John. Jesus never said that. Couldn't have said that in the time he lived. So, finally it came down to this, that the parables were succinct little stories that would be remembered intact down through the years and told again, just as we heard some of them told again this morning. Probably unchanged from the time. There are times where the writer of the gospel can't quite understand what the parable is about, and he tries to explain it, and he misses the point. I've had people remind me of that just in the last day or two, that they read a parable they couldn't understand. But we won't say who that was. So, if you want to be a Christian, one would say you're kind of a follower of Jesus, without religion, without the supernaturalism, then read the parables. That's your best hope. So now the third point, the parable itself. The parable of the prodigal son. I want to say the parable of the prodigal because we are all prodigals. We all, from time to time, go off into a far country. Happened to me once when I was in seminary. My neighbor bought a car. My car had a dead battery. I didn't have any money, but I bought a new car. Then a few days later, I thought, I came to my senses, but it was too late. I was saddled with the debt. Sometimes a man will meet a woman in a bar, and he finds her attractive, or maybe she finds him attractive. They find each other attractive. They date a little bit. They get to know each other a little bit. Pretty soon, they're engaged. Pretty soon, they're married, and then sometimes, about 2 days after the marriage, one of them says, "What? What?" And he comes to his senses, or she comes to her senses. I didn't know. Then, looking back, there was a red flag, 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 but in my state, I couldn't see them. I was blind, but now I see. And then there's a whole thing to figure out what to do the rest of your life. I'd say, on the other hand, some people meet somebody in a bar, and they fall in love with them, and they have a happy life for 50 or 60 years later. I know, I mean, that happens. So don't forget about the bars, they're fine. Sometimes it's alcoholic. That's our traditional one. We know, right? Somebody drinks about a quart of vodka every day but swears they're not alcoholic. Then one day somebody says something, or maybe they lose their job or something, and they go to the AA meeting and they stand up and they realize they come to themselves, and they stand up and say, "My name is Joe Blow and I'm an alcoholic." And that's the beginning. They're set free. They were blind, but now they see. Magnificent thing. I have a good friend. 25 years ago, His boss told him, you better get to AA, and he got to AA, and he stopped drinking, and for 25 years he's been sober. He's a free man, he's free. He has alcohol in his house. If you come to see him, he'll give yourself a glass of wine, doesn't bother him. But if you're there a couple of days, he will say this. He'll say, this afternoon I'm going to a meeting. Why does he still go to the meetings? To remind himself of the real world that he lives in. It's something like this. We are born into this world. When we come in, we're totally innocent. We know nothing. Well, we might know some music because sometimes people play music, but that's a whole different subject. Okay, so we don't know anything, but we learn some things. And after a while, maybe life is difficult in a particular situation, and we kind of create a little artificial world in which to live. And then after a while, that artificial world collapses on us, and then we come to our senses, and we come back to the real world. And the story says, this happens to everybody. Everybody. If you don't know that this has happened to you, you are indeed blind. And then you come to your senses, and guess what? You go back to the real world, back to reality, and reality turns out to be a good place to be. A good place. In fact, reality puts a cloak around your shoulders, puts shoes on your feet, puts a ring on your hand, and creates a feast. That's how good it is to come back to the real world. Now, this is where, let me see. Yeah. All right. We got time for the hard part. This is not just individual. This is not just an individual story this parable is about. I remind you of Germany after World War I. Beaten badly, humiliated at Versailles, economy in a mess. They needed an artificial universe. The real universe didn't seem good. Somebody came along with an artificial universe with a lie, a huge, unbelievable lie, and they swallowed it hook, line, and sinker, and the result of that was millions and millions and millions of deaths. That's what choosing a lie did for them. German people were bright, well-educated, smart people, some of the best Christian theologians, not just Bonhoeffer, but Tillich and Bultmann, many of the best Christian theologians were German. Still, they bought the lie. Not everybody. Some people died because they didn't believe it. Some people stood up and were hanged for it. But overall, they bought it. And the price was unbelievably high. But guess what? After a war, after being beaten up, after seeing, getting clear eyes, they came to their senses. Now, they were just a couple of decades into this. Well, it wasn't deep into the marrow of their bones yet. They came to their senses, and over a period of about 50 years now, German is a good place to be. If I spoke good German, I'd go there tomorrow and live there for a while. Now, let's tell the story about another country. About 350 years ago, our country, in its infancy, made a dreadful decision. They needed cheap labor. They had crops that required labor, had to be cheap labor, and they chose slavery. To do that, they had to tell themselves a story, and the story they told themselves was simple this: if you're white, you're human. If you're black, you're not fully human. You don't have to treat black people the way that you treat white people. It's different. Well, we wrote it in the Declaration of Independence, but underneath our breath, we were saying, except for black people. A cruel system, horrible system, incredibly profitable system. Incredibly profitable. At the time of the Civil War, beginning of the Civil War, in the southeastern United States, we grew 90% of the world's cotton. 90%. In the city of Charleston, you might have missed this when you went to Charleston. In the city of Charleston at that time, There lived more millionaires in the city of Charleston than anywhere else in our country. Charleston was the center of prosperity in the United States at that time because of slavery. That's why they fired the first shot. Now, how about that? Are we coming to our senses? I want to say we are trying to come to our senses. In these recent years, we've made a fresh effort to come to our senses. We have fought a war about it, but just after the war, we reimposed the system. President Grant looked at the situation of black people in the South about 10 years after the war, and he said it was all a waste. All of that fighting, all of that dying, and the black people in the South are just as bad as they ever were off. But some of us learned. When I was 20 years old, I had an epiphany, and I realized that segregation was a horrible thing, and it was like I had been blind, but then I could see. But I didn't see it all. Over the course of my lifetime until now, I keep having little epiphanies, and I see another thing, and I see another thing, and I see another thing. So it's a lifelong journey, folks. Coming to our senses. Coming to our senses. The Germans only had about 2 decades of that stuff to get over. We had 350 years of it to get over. We taught it in our schools, we taught it in our churches, we taught it in our Sunday school classes, we taught it in our sermons, we taught it in our political speeches, we taught it in our law enforcement, we taught it in the government generally. It's deep, deep, deep. We're going to work at this for a long time. Do not grow weary. But I believe to the deeps of my being, and this is my bias maybe, I believe to the deeps of our being, to my being, that you shall know the truth, and the truth shall indeed set you free. Amen.